So we're on page 104. Okay, so trust is generated by reflecting on our teacher's qualities and the role they play in our lives, which is similar to the role that the Buddha would play if he were alive today. Our spiritual teachers play a singular role in our lives, for they are the ones who teach, guide, and encourage us along the path. Through their actions, they evince the conduct of realized beings. Without their compassionate assistance, it would be extremely difficult for us to cultivate wisdom and to progress towards awakening. The more we practice, the closer we become to our mentors' minds and the Buddha's mind, strengthening and increasing our faith in the teachings and by extension in those who teach and guide us. Okay, so many of us, at least of my generation, one of the things that really attracted us to the Dharma was the teachers. Yeah, when we went and encountered these different Tibetan lamas, they were so unique in the way they looked at the world and the way they treated people that we thought, I want to be like them. Yeah. And so they're showing a role model for what a person who is a together person looks like, you know? To put it in slang, somebody who's got their stuff together, you know? They show us that example and that it's possible to become like that. Okay? So that's the question came up this morning about reading books and considering somebody our teacher. And yes, they teach us the Dharma through books, but it's the, you know, also encountering somebody who walks the talk, yeah. And then it gives you this feeling that yeah, it can be done and it is possible, and there exist people who can do it. Okay? And so if they can do it, I can do it. You know, that kind of feeling. So, you know, it's in that way that a spiritual mentor has a very unique role in our lives. Yeah? Because how many other people are, you know, going to teach you the Dharma and show an example of what it looks like to be somebody who really believes and practices it and integrates it in their life, you know? Do your old friends show you that example? Do your parents? Do your cousins? Yeah? Do your worldly teachers? You know? Who else in your life can teach you the Dharma and show you, you know, that kind of example? So it's, you know, not so many people. And when we really look and we see, you know, well, our whole life, who have we taken refuge in? Or what have we taken refuge in our life? Well, when we were little kids, we took refuge in our parents or whoever it was who brought us up. Yeah? And then as we got older, we started taking refuge in our friends. Didn't we? It's like, okay, parents, they're great, but they're a bit old-fashioned. They're not with it. My friends, they're so cool. I can talk to them about anything. They'll tell me anything. We're so close because we confide in each other. We do so many fun things together. You know, they have my back. So we take refuge in our friends. Yeah. Now, what kind... can your friends guide you on the path to liberation? Yeah. And what do they encourage you to do? And what kind of example do they set for you? Yeah? So, you know, it just gives you, you know, something to think about, you know, that this is a very unique role our spiritual teacher plays. Mm-hmm. So an example of this is the young spiritual seeker Sudana, the main character in the Array of Stalks Sutra, which is a sub-sutra in the Avatamsaka Sutra. I mentioned him the other day. He's the one when I went to 53 teachers. Sudana earnestly sought to learn the Bodhisattva's practices. Each spiritual mentor he went to taught him a portion and then referred him to another spiritual mentor to continue his learning. As Sudana learned and practiced the Bodhisattva deeds, his regard for his spiritual mentors increased. Okay, so that's what happens when you practice the teachings. Your feeling of closeness with your teacher becomes much stronger, whether you're with your teacher or not, because you're making your mind like your teacher's mind, you know? You're trying to generate those qualities that you admire, okay? In the same way that we feel closer to the Buddha the more we practice, because our mind is getting transformed and it's becoming much more like the Buddha's mind, okay? When I say that your mind is becoming like the Buddha or becoming like the spiritual mentor, it doesn't mean that your personality is becoming like them, that you start having the same sense of humor and you use the same words and you know, both like or dislike Tibetan tea, okay? It doesn't mean that. It means in terms of the Dharma qualities, in terms of the qualities that make your character, yeah? Then, you know, those values, those qualities, the integrity, yeah? The compassion, those kinds of things become closer and closer to those of the Buddha and to our teachers and, of course, to the Bodhisattva Sangha. So here is the scene in which Sudana approaches Avalokiteshvara, the 27th of his 53 mentors. Now, do you think those 53 mentors got jealous of each other? Oh, Sudana came and, you know, asked me for teachings. Well, that's good. I must be better than his previous teacher who couldn't teach him that. So I'm good. Oh, now Sudana has mastered what I've taught him. I can kind of fake it and try and teach him things I really don't know. But I should probably send him on to another teacher. Ah, darn it. You know, here goes this good disciple who praises me, and I gotta send him on to another teacher. I'm so jealous of that other teacher who now gets this good disciple. And Sudan is gonna praise that other teacher more than me. Okay, and do you think that's what's going on? Yeah. Do you think that one of the most famous Mahayana sutras in the world has that kind of subtext? Okay. So here he is approaching Avalokiteshvara, the 27th of the 53. Transported with joy on seeing Avalokiteshvara, his eyes fixed on him, his mind, Sudana's mind, undistracted, full of the energy of faith in the spiritual mentor, thinking of seeing spiritual mentors as at once seeing Buddhas, thinking of the reception of the multitudes of all truths as originating in spiritual mentors, thinking of the attainment of all virtues as deriving from spiritual mentors, thinking of how hard it is to meet spiritual mentors, thinking of spiritual mentors as the source from which the jewels of the knowledge of the 10 powers are obtained, thinking of spiritual mentors as the source of vision of inexhaustible knowledge, thinking that the growth of the sprouts of goodness depend on spiritual mentors, thinking that the door of omniscience is revealed by spiritual mentors, thinking that the way to enter the ocean of great knowledge is pointed out by spiritual mentors, thinking that the accumulation of the source of omniscience is fostered by spiritual mentors, Sudhana approached Avalokiteshvara. Do we approach our teachers thinking like that? Yeah, we probably go, oh, okay, well, yeah, that's good. Who's this guy? You know, yeah, what can he teach me? What can she teach me? I wonder why they shave their head. They wear so many funny clothes. Oh, well. You know, I mean, here we just have, I mean, this passage is an exemplar to us of how to train our mind. By reflecting on our teacher's qualities, ethical conduct, kindness, meditative abilities, and so on, we will have a positive view of them. Our trust and inspiration will increase, and our minds will be receptive to their teachings. This is not blind faith, because there are reasons to hold this person in high regard and have confidence in his or her ability to guide us on the path. Okay, so we've checked the person out. Okay, and we've checked the teachings out. However, if we don't use our capacity for critical thinking to contemplate the reasons proving emptiness, and instead employ it to analyze the faults of our spiritual mentor. Okay, so instead of using the analytic abilities to contemplate emptiness, we use it to pick faults at our spiritual mentor. We put ourselves in the precarious position of possibly angrily cutting off the relationship with our mentor and abandoning Dharma practice. We are the ones who suffer the most should this happen. The benefit or loss that accrues to us in our relationship with our spiritual mentors depends on which qualities we choose to focus on. Yeah. So here we are again with a teaching that comes up again and again, that our experience depends on our perspective and our interpretation and what we pay attention to. Okay? So as with any other person, if we pay attention to their good qualities, we feel invigorated, we feel comfortable. If we pick faults, we feel like, you know, this whole thing is useless, it's stupid, you know, get me out of here. Okay? So it's really up to us how we look at things. Yeah? And so to really try and rein in that judgmental, critical mind, because it can wreak havoc if we start doing this in terms of our spiritual mentors. If we're going to look for faults, we do it before we take that person as our spiritual mentor. Because then we can look, they have qualities we don't respect, it doesn't seem like they're qualified, fine, we don't form that relationship. Yeah. But once we form the relationship, to then start picking faults and criticizing, yeah, it's we're the ones who suffer from doing that. We may have more than one spiritual mentor. It is up to us. Atisha had over 140 mentors, while Drom Dompa had less than 5. Since it is important to have a positive regard for our teachers. If we have an extremely critical and judgmental mind, it may be better to have fewer teachers. Okay. Having faith and respect for teachers sitting on high thrones, whom we seldom see, is easy. Because we only see them in a Dharma context. They're sitting on high thrones. They're teaching the Dharma. We hear the Dharma. We feel wonderful. So having faith and and respect for that kind of teacher, it's not too difficult. It is much more challenging to appreciate the teacher who gives us daily or weekly Dharma teachings and to whom we offer service. We tend to treat that mentor like an old friend and cease to appreciate his or her qualities and kindness. Because we may easily start to criticize his or her habits or stop listening to advice, we must take special care in our relationships with the teachers we see often to ensure that our attitude and behavior do not sabotage this most precious relationship. Okay? So, you know, we see the Dalai Lama sitting on the throne giving these marvelous teachings or empowerment. Faith comes very easily, you know. What a remarkable human being, and, you know, and his kindness radiates and he smiles and, you know, he's so compassionate. But the teacher, you know, we were talking yesterday about the resident teacher in the place where you live. So that's the one that you see every day, you know, who's going to point out your faults in real time, who you're not going to see all the time sitting on a Dharma throne giving teachings. You're going to see them eating. You're going to see them, you know, talking on the phone. You're going to see them dealing with other disciples, you know, and it's really easy to start having a lot of opinions, you know. And why are they talking to that person like that? You know, they should have compassion. They're teaching me compassion, and look how they're acting. You know, what kind of teacher is this? Why did I choose this person as one of my spiritual mentors? So Venerable Jende, so some of you know, a Chinese nun, that's a good friend of ours. She was telling me a story many years ago where she was with Venerable Wu Yin, and they were discussing something, and then a phone call came from another disciple. Venerable Wu Yin had to take the phone call, and Venerable Jende didn't know what the other disciple was saying, but Venerable Wu Yin was mad, or at least showing the aspect of being mad. And was saying to this, you know, was really scolding this other disciple. Yeah. And Venerable Jende was going, you know, like, oh, this is my spiritual mentor talking to somebody like this. Like, I thought they were supposed to be compassionate and kind. Yeah. And she really has a problem with anger. Yeah. And then what happened is, Venerable Wu Yin put the phone down. The call was over. She turned back to Venerable Jende and the other people. And she's in a great mood. And she's fine. And Venerable Jende goes, ding dong. She wasn't really mad. She had to talk that way to get through to that particular disciple. Yeah. And Venerable Jende realized that all her projections, you know, on her teacher like that were completely made up by her own mind. Since we learn by observing the example of others, reflecting on our teacher's positive qualities will inspire us to make an effort to develop those same qualities ourselves. If we have the opportunity to live near our teachers and help them with various projects, We will witness Dharma lived in daily life by observing how our teachers treat people and manage a variety of situations judiciously and compassionately. Learning by observing a wise practitioner is a precious opportunity, one that cannot be gained by reading a book. Okay, so another difference from reading a book or watching a video. Yeah. Whether or not our teachers are highly realized, we benefit by seeing them in a positive light. If we think someone is an ordinary person, even if he or she teaches us a profound topic, we will not listen or take their words seriously. But if we think that an awakened being is teaching us, we will listen carefully and put the teachings into practice. In this way, trust and faith in our spiritual mentors supports us in our practice and uplifts us when we feel discouraged. Okay? So if we look at our teachers and think, like I was telling you about Geshe Eshe Topden, you know, with his whiskers and his shemdop hiked up and his socks falling down, and and if you just look at, oh, this is some old monk, you know, what does he know? Then whatever he teaches you, well, it's just some old monk talking, you know, nothing much. But if you look and you say, oh, this is somebody who's really studied and practiced and who is extremely humble and doesn't show off his qualities at all. Yeah. And, you know, and those are good qualities I admire, then I want to see how they live and, you know, what they're teaching me to be like, because I want to be like that too. So we should see, are we inspired by teachers like Geshe Eshe Topden, or are we inspired by the teachers who sit on high thrones with lots of brocade and a whole string of disciples following along after them? Yeah? What kind of teacher, it gets us excited about the Dharma? That's going to tell us something about ourselves. Okay. Okay, then, cultivating appreciation and respect by seeing their kindness. So the first one was cultivating faith and trust by seeing their qualities. This is cultivating appreciation and respect by seeing their kindness. Countless Buddhas have appeared in the past, and of these, Shakyamuni Buddha is the kindest to us because he expounded the teachings in our world. There's some story they tell. I can't get all the details, but apparently all the Buddhas were having a meeting at one time. And, one of the head Buddhas said, okay, there's the beings in the Saha world. That's what our world is called, the Saha world. And who wants to go down and help those sentient beings? And the room was quiet. None of the Buddhas volunteered. And then finally Shakyamuni Buddha raised his hand and said, I'll go. The other Buddhas went, good luck. Yeah. But, I mean, that's his kindness. He wanted to take care of us. Although we did not have the fortune to receive teachings directly from the Buddha or from the lineage of sages in India and Tibet that carried his word to the present day, our spiritual mentors act as the messengers delivering these priceless teachings to us. Sometimes I think, what would it be like to have been a disciple of Nagarjuna? Wow. You know? Just sitting at Nagarjuna's feet and listening to him teach, what would that have been like? Whoa. Yeah. So that's why I want to go to the Pure Land, because they say that he went to the Pure Land. Okay. I'm stalking the garden. If he goes there, I'm going there. Huh? Sukhavati. Yeah, they say that after he passed, he went to Sukhavati. Okay. But I have a little bit of a conflict because I also want to be near His Holiness. So I pray to go to Sukhavati, but then I also pray to come back here and help His Holiness. But then I think, I want to come back here to this world. Maybe I better go to Sukhavati first. But I want to be with His Holiness. Then I think, oh, but Chenrezig is also in Sukhavati. Okay. But His Holiness needs help here. But I can't help him in my present state. Anyway, okay. Through the kindness of our spiritual mentors, we have access to the vast and profound teachings that show us the path to awakening. Due to our teacher's kindness, we now have the opportunity to gain some Dharma understanding, leave positive imprints on our mind stream, and gain realizations. Although our parents and close friends love us and wish us well, they do not have the ability to lead us out of the morass of samsara. The kindness of our spiritual mentors, who alone have the knowledge and skill to guide us, is incomparable. Yeah, what more can I say? It's totally, yeah. Okay, so the Ten Teaching Sutra says, develop the following ideas with respect to your teachers. I have wandered for a long time through cyclic existence, and they search for me. I have been asleep, having been obscured by confusion for a long time, and they wake me. I have entered a bad path, and they reveal the good path to me. They release me from being bound in the prison of samsara. They are the rain clouds that put out my blazing fire of attachment. Thinking of the kindness of our teachers in this way, heartfelt gratitude, appreciation, and veneration will naturally arise for them. This joyful attitude removes obstacles and facilitates our practice. The array of Stock Sutra expresses the immense kindness of our spiritual mentors. So here's Sudana speaking again. The teachers are those who protect me from all miserable rebirths. They cause me to know the equality of phenomena. They show me the path that leads to happiness and those that lead to unhappiness. They instruct me in deeds always auspicious. They reveal to me the path to the city of omniscience. They cause me to enter the ocean of the sphere of reality. They show me the sea of past, present, and future phenomena. And they reveal to me the circle of the Arya's assembly. The teachers increase all my virtues. Remembering this, you will weep. Okay. And then Sudana reflects. I, Sudana, have come here thinking one-pointedly. These are my teachers, instructors in the teachings, the ones who totally reveal the good qualities of all things, and then fully teach the bodhisattva way of life. These bodhisattvas have caused my mind to develop. They have produced my awakening as a bodhisattva. Therefore, my teachers, are praised by the Buddhas. With such virtuous thoughts, I have come here. As they protect the world, they are like heroes. They are captains, protectors, and refuge. They are an eye providing me with happiness, which with such thoughts I respect and serve my teachers. Okay, so again, these are passages from the scriptures. They're showing us, you know, how to cultivate these kinds of attitudes, you know, how to contemplate, where to steer our mind, how to think of our spiritual mentors. Okay, so the reflection. Had you not met your spiritual mentors, what might your life be like now? What would you be doing? What might the state of your mind be? When I think of this, it is absolutely terrifying. Because I think I would have made a big mess of my own life and a mess of other people's lives if I hadn't met my teachers. Among all those who you hold dear and who you love, do any of them have the ability to guide you on the path to full awakening? So your parents, your relatives, your best friends, your spouse, you know, do any of them have that ability? And what do the Dharma teachings mean to you? How valuable are they? Allow yourself to feel gratitude and respect for those who have taught you. Okay, now we're getting into some of the stuff that's more difficult to understand. So beginning with seeing spiritual mentors as Buddhas. Okay, so remember in our outline we were talking about following our teachers in terms of thought and in terms of action. And in terms of thought, it was by cultivating faith and trust by seeing their good qualities, and then cultivating appreciation and gratitude and respect by thinking of their kindness. Okay. And so seeing the spiritual mentor as a Buddha is one way in Tantra that helps you to develop that kind of perspective. Okay, so Ms. Holiness says, because of the influence of Vajrayana in all four Tibetan Buddhist traditions, disciples are instructed to cultivate the perception of their gurus as Buddhas. It is important to understand this correctly in order to avoid confusion. In the context of Tantra, seeing the guru as the Buddha is important. A guru who is able to give all four empowerments of highest yoga Tantra based on his or her own experience is definitely a Buddha, and seeing him or her as a Buddha is reasonable. Some gurus who give empowerments do not have that experience, but if we see them as Buddhas, it increases our concentration and enhances our meditative experience. Okay? So if we see them as Buddhas, it uplifts our mind, you know, in the Tantra practice. When we view our spiritual mentors as the Buddha, Buddhahood does not seem so distant. We come to feel close to the Buddha and begin to think that awakening is possible and awakened beings actually exist. Although not all spiritual mentors are Buddhas, some of our mentors are ordinary beings, our practice will progress well for maintaining a positive view of them. So positive, he doesn't say seeing them as Buddhas. He says maintaining a positive view of them. For example, in the past, the presidents of a country were fully qualified. They were honest, reliable, and cared for the citizens. At least the white, rich, freed ones in this country. Male. Yeah. Okay. That's who the Declaration and the Constitution, who wrote them and who they were written for. Yeah. the rest of us got left out. But they wrote the words, and now we're holding them to what was written. So that's good. Later on, the quality of the precedents declined. This was written before 2016, by the way. Nevertheless, we see these people as precedents because they have that title, perform that function, and represent our country. We respect them, but do not blindly follow them. Okay, so we respect the office, the role, but we don't blindly follow them. Maybe we don't follow them. Maybe, you know, I mean, there's lots of, each individual is going to be different regarding this. So the teaching to see the spiritual mentor as the Buddha is borrowed from highest yoga tantra and is often taught earlier on the path to prepare disciples to receive tantric empowerments. Okay, so if you read Pabongka Rinpoche's Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand, he was speaking to an audience of people who were preparing to take highest class yoga empowerment. That's who his audience was. He wasn't speaking to Losang, Tachi, and Daichen. Okay. He was teaching to people who were well established in the Dharma, who had a good understanding, who were preparing for highest class tantra initiation. Okay. However, this teaching to see the spiritual mentor as the Buddha is not appropriate for beginners because it is open to misunderstanding. As noted above, the fundamental vehicle and perfection vehicle do not instruct us to view our teacher as a Buddha, although we may personally choose to do so. So if we wish to do that, there's nobody telling us we can't. It's perfectly all right to do. But it's not required according to that particular vehicle and the teachings that we receive in that vehicle. We Tibetans say that it's best not to bring the topic of seeing the spiritual mentor as the Buddha to the debate ground because the argument cannot be sustained. Okay, so they debate everything right, left, and center using reasoning. This one, they say, don't take it to the debate ground because you can't prove it. Okay? In a debate, here's the example. In a debate, one monk asked another, some texts say that our spiritual mentors are Buddhists. Do you agree? The second monk replied affirmatively. Then the first monk asked, do you have disciples here in the monastery? Are you also a Buddha? At which point the second monk was chagrined because he knew he was not. So yeah, he had disciples in the monastery. He taught the younger monks. But he knew he wasn't a Buddha. Yeah. And yet, here are those people, you know, maybe looking at him as a bodhisattva or as a Buddha. Does that mean that he should, even though he wasn't, does that mean that he, you know, his teachers are also fake and they're not really Buddhas, even though he's seeing them that way? Okay, so that's why they say don't put it on the debate ground. Okay, because this is a teaching that is designed to inspire the mind. And if you try and use reasoning, you're going to get tangled up. Okay. So Tsongkhapa's presentation of relying on a spiritual master in the Lamrim Chenmo is well balanced, and if we follow that, less confusion will arise. Okay, His Holiness really comes back to Tsongkhapa on this. So Tsongkhapa says, moreover, pay attention. Oh, they made that an L instead of a 1. Tsongkhapa says, moreover, pay attention to the good qualities that the guru does have, such as ethical conduct, learnedness, and faith. and reflect on those qualities. Once you have become conditioned to this, you may notice that your guru has a small number of faults. However, this does not impede your faith because you are focusing on the good qualities. Okay? Tsongkhapa does not say to see our teacher's faults as good qualities. Repeat. Tsongkhapa does not say to see our teacher's faults as good qualities or to see all his actions as perfect. Okay? This is important. There have been some scandals in different Buddhist groups. And in one group in particular, the abuse went on for many, many years before, people had been calling it out for many years, but it never got acted upon, okay? So even when people were calling it out, some people were, because the particular teacher, he was hitting students, sometimes slugging them or slapping them. He was having sex with them, and he was also sometimes being incredibly angry and really emotionally abusive, demeaning some of the students. Okay? So some of the students who called this out were not, by the people who still had faith in that teacher, they didn't like that group of students. And the people who had faith in the teacher were trying to explain to the other group that actually those were good qualities. And there's a story that in the group one time, in front of a whole group of people during a teaching, this teacher gut-punched the nun, like right in her stomach. And, it hurt. Yeah, it hurt. And she left. And then they had been told, you see all the actions of the teacher as perfect. So she comes back. So the other disciples, the group that are still in favor of the teacher, say, this was a teaching. He gave her a very strong teaching. And she came back and said, yes, it was a teaching. And it was something very good. And it really helped me. Okay? Now, whether she really genuinely felt that, or whether she was painting, whitewashing the whole thing, because she had been taught that if you don't see every action as your teacher is perfect, and if you criticize your teacher, you're going to hell. Okay? So, it threw people's minds. This was just one incident. But you see the kind of confusion, that this teaching caused in people's minds because they didn't know, is this abuse or is this a teaching? Yeah. And is it okay? I mean, if the teacher comes and slugs me in the stomach, is that a blessing? If you're a woman and the teacher, asking you for sex, is that a blessing? Some women were told that. They were told, you are special, you are a dakini. And the women from their side thought, wow, here's the teacher paying attention to me. There's many other women around, but he wants me. I must be special. And he said, I'm getting a special teaching by being close to him in this way. And then, you go along with that, and then he turns around and he denigrates you and blows his top. And you get totally confused. Totally confused. Yeah? It's kind of like, the psychologists talk about this a lot. In cases of child abuse, in cases of taking hostage, where you love somebody and you're afraid of them at the same time. Yeah? And how crazy making that is. And so this is why His Holiness says, yeah, this teaching should not be taught to beginners. And why he points out that Tsongkhapa does not say, see all actions of your guru as perfect. Okay? So Tsongkhapa, you know, he really refers in that and says, this is the balanced way to see it. You know, after Pabongka Rinpoche, Pabongka Rinpoche really developed that thing of kind of one teacher, one deity, one protector. And so many people followed it, you know. And then he taught relying on the spiritual mentor in this way, you know. And he was a very great lama. And so people followed what he said. But I think His Holiness has a different view. Yeah? And he's quoting Tsongkhapa, you know, the head of the lineage, to show that. And to tell you the truth, His Holiness's view and Tsongkhapa's view make a lot of sense to me. I tried the other way. It didn't work for me. You know, for some people maybe it works. It didn't work for me. Okay, so Tsongkhapa does not say to see our teacher's faults as good qualities or to see all his actions as perfect. In the Lamrim Chenmo, he expounds very little on seeing the guru as the Buddha. And I think what I did is I went and counted the pages. Let's see if I think I did. The English translation of the text, of the section on relying on the spiritual mentor is 23 pages long. Only half of one page is dedicated to the topic of seeing our spiritual mentors as the Buddha. Half of one page in Tsongkhapa's primary text. So, in the Lamrim Chenmo, he expounds very little on seeing the guru as the Buddha. And when he does, his purpose is to prevent us from damaging our relationship with our guru. He encourages us to see their good qualities so that we will benefit from their teachings and guidance. Okay? He doesn't encourage us to say that pink is purple and green is chartreuse. You know, Tsongkhapa's not doing that. You focus on their good qualities. When you focus on the good qualities more, you have faith and trust. You can also, you know, see that there may be some small faults, but they don't take huge proportion, you know, if the teacher is a reasonable one. If you, you know, have a teacher that becomes Charlatananda, yeah, then there's some real problems. Okay, and His Holiness will speak about that. Okay, so the purpose of seeing the mentor as the Buddha is so that we will benefit from their teachings and guidance. How does seeing them in that way help us to benefit from their teachings and guidance? Because, like I just explained, if we see them as some ordinary person, oh, here's, you know, that old kind of old scruffy monk, you know. Or here's somebody who grew up with Mickey Mouse just like me. Yeah, then they're not so special. And they may be teaching the Dharma, but they're not so special. So I'm not going to pay much attention to it. Yeah? And if we have that attitude, like Swamina said, even the Buddha appears to us, we're not the benefit. Yeah, we're going to look. That guy, they say he's the Buddha, you know? Even Shakyamuni Buddha appears in front of us. Yeah? And we're going to look and say, why does he have blue hair? Why does he have curls on his hair? Monastics are supposed to shave their head. Why does he have blue hair? Who does he think he is? You know, we're going to pick on things like that instead of listening to the teachings. Okay, His Holiness continues. We should avoid fanciful ideas such as thinking, since my mentor is a Buddha, he doesn't get sick. And therefore, we don't call the doctor when he's ill. Yeah. But see, this is why the teaching gets very confusing. Because if he's a Buddha, then he shouldn't get sick. And if he is getting sick, and he's only showing the aspect of getting sick, then he can heal himself. So why do I need to take him to the doctor? Well, you need to, he's getting sick to show, he's showing the aspect of getting sick so you can accumulate merit by taking him to the doctor. Well, maybe, yeah, that could be so. But then you also get confused, well, if he's really the Buddha, why did he get sick to start with? Yeah, and why can't he cure himself? So you know, the teaching on seeing the guru as Buddha, you have to shape it in a certain way so that you don't get confused. Yeah. But it can be difficult, and I think that's why His Holiness is saying, you know, see your fundamental vehicle teachers as fundamental vehicle teachers. See your paramitayana teachers as paramitayana teachers. If our teacher makes a mistake while reading a text or explaining its meaning, it's fine to respectfully point it out. We should avoid thinking that since he is an omniscient Buddha, he should know the way to a distant place and then become disillusioned when he asks us for directions. Okay. Or when he's reading a text and, you know, and makes a mistake. I remember one time, Sencho Serkan Rinpoche was reading something, you know, reading one of the texts. And he said something, and it didn't sound quite right, but none of us said anything. And then he kept reading, and another passage said the opposite thing. And at that time, we said, Rinpoche, you know, this, what you said here, doesn't match what you said there. And he says, did I say that before? You know? And we said, yeah. He said, oh, I just made a mistake reading. Why didn't you tell me when I said it? Why are you only calling it up now? You know? So he was saying, you know, if I make a mistake when I'm teaching, say something then and there. Yeah? Then it's not disrespectful. But, you know, we can develop this whole mind. Oh, well, he said that and he made a mistake, but he's really a Buddha and he's doing that for our benefit. What's the benefit to me? So I will remember this passage, and I'll remember how it should be, not how he said it. You know, and we make something up, okay? We also, to be avoided, is idealizing our spiritual mentors. Yeah. Oh, look, you see this, you know, when His Holiness walks to a public teaching, everybody is like staring at him, tracking him as he walks. Will he look at me? 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 He's looking at that person. Will he look at me? Will he? Oh, he walked right by me. I wasn't the chosen. Well, I can try for when he leaves. Contact and he smiled. Ooh, I get to tell all my friends. The Dalai Lama looked at me. Of all these thousands of people, he looked at me. You observe sometime. Yeah, you watch. Okay. So also to be avoided is idealizing our spiritual mentors. There is a Tibetan saying, a teacher who is too devoted makes the Lama a hypocrite. Oh, good. Good. You heard what I said. A student who is too devoted makes the Lama into a hypocrite. Okay, the Lama cannot possibly live up to the glowing acclaim the disciple has spread about him or her in the community. Having an idealistic attitude sets us up for disappointment. It is impossible for anyone to continually fulfill our unrealistic expectations. But that doesn't stop us from hoping that they will fulfill our unrealistic expectations. Okay. The measure of gaining proper reliance on the spiritual master is wholeheartedly appreciating their good qualities and not focusing on their weaknesses. In general, seeing the spiritual mentor as a Buddha is a form of useful and constructive imagination. In most cases, it is not a reliable cognizer. Even though there are definitely ordinary beings and bodhisattvas among those who teach the Dharma, regarding our teachers as Buddhas, listening to their teachings, practicing accordingly, and respectively serving our mentors enables us to be more receptive to teachings and wise advice and to experience many other positive results. Okay, as opposed to, you know, well, my teacher's just ordinary Joe Blow. The meditation to see our spiritual mentors as Buddhas is similar to the meditation to imagine the entire earth covered with skeletons. So there's a meditation when you're practicing concentration where you imagine all the flesh falling away from your body and just their bones sitting there. And then the bones growing bigger, the skeleton manifesting and replicating until the whole universe is filled with bones. And then you focus on that single pointedly. It's a wonderful meditation for losing interest in samsara. Yeah? It really, it's like, yeah, this is what's left of this life in samsara, and yeah. Okay, so it's a very good meditation for gaining that kind of understanding and some kind of feeling in your gut about how horrible samsara is. Okay, in the same way that if we practice seeing our teachers in a positive light, yeah, then it really helps us be optimistic and to take the teachings seriously and to listen and to have a happier mind in general. Yeah. Unless we choose to compete with all the other students for who gets the most attention from the teacher who is the Buddha. Yeah. Then that teaching of seeing the guru as the Buddha becomes something that the students' minds just proliferate with afflictions of how, you know, oh, the teacher's the Buddha. Oh, he's so wonderful. He asked me to make tea. I'm making the tea. Get out of the kitchen. Yeah, he asked me to make the tea. He didn't ask you to make the tea. He asked me to change the flowers in his room. He didn't ask you to do it. Yeah? So I'm going in the teacher's room to change the flowers. He asked me to drive him somewhere. In my car. I'm driving the teacher. Because I have a nice car, and I'm a good driver, and he wants to spend more time with me. Did he ask you to drive him? That's too bad. Maybe next time he will. And by the way, did I show you the picture that we took of me and my guru together? And he signed it right here. Two Tilton children love so and so. See, isn't that nice? It's on my altar. Did he sign a picture for you too? Do you have a picture of the guru? Yeah. Oh, you do. Oh, that's really too bad. Let me know next time you're together. I'll take a picture of you and the guru together, you know, and give it to him to sign for you. I'm exaggerating. But just a little bit. Yeah, you're nodding, huh? You've seen it. Okay, so the meditation to see our spiritual mentors as Buddhas is similar to the meditation to imagine the entire earth filled with skeletons. Both involve imagination that is consciously cultivated and will have a beneficial effect on our mind. Okay? So it's something that you consciously cultivate, even though it's not totally realistic. The earth, the universe is not filled with bones. But it is a helpful tool for you to focus on to develop renunciation. Similarly, to see, you know, if you see the guru as the Buddha, it's helpful to your practice. Now, some people go, oh, see the guru as the Buddha. Okay, does that mean that I imagine him with blue curly hair? Yeah, and I imagine him wearing the, you know, the robes of the monk? Yeah. Does he always sit with his hand like this? Or is it this way? No. That way. Well, anyway. So he's just, I imagine him as the Buddha. So he's always sitting like this. Yeah. He's eating lunch, and I think of him sitting like this. Yeah. He's walking down the street, and I think of him still sitting like this. So I'm seeing him as the Buddha, right? If our mind seizes every opportunity to find imperfections in our spiritual mentors, it is helpful to reflect, why am I here? Okay, whenever your mind turns south, you know, when you're in a Dharma setting, ask yourself, why did I come here? And, okay, well, here it says, why am I here? It is not to notice my teacher's shortcomings, but to learn from their good qualities. This brings us back to the reason we are practicing the Dharma. Why am I here? Did I come here just so I can pick faults at the teacher? Is that why I came? I tell people when they come to the Abbey and they're unhappy, you know, ask yourself, why did I come here? Is it to get my way or to tame my mind? Yeah, why did I come? Okay, so it's the same way. Did I come just to pick faults at somebody? Or did I come to listen to the teachings and soak marinate my mind in the teachings? Should we see flaws in our teachers, we can transform them into a learning experience. If our teacher behaves rudely, we think, this is how I look when I am rude. So I find this helpful to do not only with teachers, but with any person I see. Yeah. So in that respect, our dear Prez is a great teacher. Yeah. This is how I look when I insult people. This is how I look when I denigrate and ridicule people. Yeah. I don't want to be that kind of person. And then you learn a lot because you see your own behavior in, you know, technicolor. And then you see how even you're reacting to that behavior in another person. And then saying, I don't want to be like that. So I need to work on my own mind, work on my own behavior, and not just focus on picking their faults, because I have the same faults. And I can't make them stop what they're doing, but I can transform my own thoughts, my own behavior. So I've got to start with that. Okay. So if we think, if our teacher behaves rudely, we think, this is how I look when I am rude. This way we will learn from the situation. If we can't give our spiritual mentors, who have more good qualities than faults, space to be human, it will be difficult to develop tolerance and forgiveness towards sentient beings who have many faults. Okay, so if we just see the faults in our teacher who has many good qualities, how many faults are we going to see in sentient beings? If we just see faults in sentient beings, are we going to be able to generate bodhicitta? Yeah? Is seeing faults in sentient beings the cause of generating bodhicitta? Forget it. Yeah. We can't do that. Okay, so we need to give them space to be human. I get that part. Sometimes the faults, in quotation marks, we find in our mentors are actually differences in personal preference. So, as I was telling you with my teacher, who likes to start the teachings at 11 and end them at 3 and dedicate for an hour. Our teacher likes to wake up early. We like to sleep late. Our mentor loves butter tea. We think it's unhealthy. Our teacher likes to have a long teaching session with no breaks. We prefer shorter ones with a lot of breaks. None of these are ethical faults on the part of the teacher. Observing how we make differences, you know, personal preferences and differences into faults gives us insight into our habitual way of thinking that needs to be corrected. Yeah? So if with a teacher, whenever there's just a difference in how you do something, yeah, or there's different opinions, and we make that into a fault, that's telling us something about our own mind, isn't it? Yeah, that every time somebody disagrees with me, I make them wrong. Okay? If I make everybody wrong because they disagree with me, who am I ever going to learn from? Yeah? Who will I take as a role model? Yeah. Am I looking for a role model, you know, myself? Yeah? A duplicate of me who I never criticize, and that will be my role model, who I want to become like? You know, that doesn't make much sense, does it? Okay, so it really shows us how we make just differences into faults. Okay? Again, we can see this with one of our favorite teachers. Anybody who disagrees with him is guilty of treason. Right? We get accused of being a traitor. Well, that's the same way our mind works. You disagree with me, something's wrong with you. Yeah. We should not force ourselves to see our spiritual mentor as the Buddha out of fear of creating destructive karma or doing it wrong. Past masters recommend this practice because they benefited from it. If we try following their advice, we may see a favorable effect. But if this feels uncomfortable, we can turn our mind to topics that inspire us. So don't, you know, force yourself to try and believe something that is not making much sense to you. Okay, now, the role of devotion. Let's see. Okay. The spiritual mentor is often said to be the root of the path, in that this relationship nourishes and stabilizes our practice. So that's what a root does to the plant. It nourishes and stabilizes the plant. But just as a plant also depends on the seed, water, fertilizer, and warmth, we need additional conditions to grow in the Dharma, such as purification and accumulating merit, listening to teachings, cultivating renunciation, bodhicitta, and the correct view, and practicing the three higher chainings and the six perfections. If only respecting and serving our spiritual mentors were adequate for attaining awakening, the Buddha would not have taught a myriad of other practices. So sometimes when we hear, seeing the Buddha, the Guru as Buddha is the root of the path, then we think that's the whole path. Yeah. As Holiness was saying, if that's the whole path, why did the Buddha teach 84,000 teachings? He should have just taught 83,999. Or no, she should have only taught one and abandoned the other 83,999. The above is a general explanation applicable to the great majority of people. There are a few cases in which a specific individual, because of his or her very strong devotion and singular karmic connection with a special teacher, is liberated by means of an encounter with that spiritual mentor. Such a situation depends on a highly qualified disciple, encountering a highly realized spiritual mentor. Yeah. So check, because we hear these things, like the Buddha, The Buddha gave his first teaching to his five old students. One of them heard that teaching, bang, he was an arhat. So we're like, okay, I'm listening to the teaching. I'm listening really closely. I'm waiting. Am I going to be one of those special ones? No, that wasn't it. I want to have the wowie kazowie snap because I'm such a good disciple with such devotion towards my teacher. Ali Ali Salam, Ali Ali Salam. And by the force of my devotion, he's going to give one teaching. Because I don't have time for the three countless great eons business. I want the quick path. And it's advertised as the quick path. So it better be quick. If it isn't, I'm going to complain. false advertising. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, this specific, you know, singular individual who has, you know, practiced a lot in previous lives and has strong devotion and strong karmic connection with a highly qualified spiritual mentor, okay, is liberated by means of an encounter with that spiritual mentor. Such a situation depends on a highly qualified disciple encountering a highly realized spiritual mentor. In such a case, if the disciple has deep devotion for the spiritual master, it is possible that the grosser levels of mind are neutralized and the subtlest mind becomes active. With this comes the understanding and experience of emptiness. Genuine compassion arises towards sentient beings who are totally immersed in dukkha and ignorant of that fact. Here, compassion arises automatically as a byproduct of the subtle mind experiencing emptiness. I remember we had life as a Western Buddhist nun. There was one young woman who came, and Geshe Sonam Rinchen was giving a talk, and she was listening, and she was totally brand new to the Dharma, but she had read some of this stuff about special teachers and special disciples, and she said afterwards, "Wow, he walked in the room, and I just felt chills in my whole body, and the hair on my arms was standing on edge, and I started to cry. I just had so much feeling for this teacher. I want to ordain." And so she came to talk to Lecce and Venerable Jampa and me and saying, "I want to ordain." And we said, "Slowly, slowly, you're new on the Dharma, you know, it's nice you had that experience, but you have to learn more about the Dharma, you have to practice, you have to check out Dieter's qualities." She was so mad at us because she wanted to get ordained right then and there. Okay, so what to do? Somebody's mad at you, you know. Then years later, I was teaching in Montana, and she came to the talk, and we walked afterwards. We took a walk, and she said, "Thank you so much for telling me then that I should wait to get ordained. You were right." Yeah. But boy, at that time, she was mad because she wanted to be that special one with, you know, because she had, you know. Well, you know. Maybe you were a special one, too, and you got chills when you saw your teacher. I mean, some people do. I mean, I've talked to people who have gone to, who are not Buddhist, who go to a public talk by His Holiness, and all of a sudden they're crying. Yeah. Okay, so somebody is who, a teacher has very strong compassion like that. People can respond in that way. Yeah. But just because we have such an experience, you know, we shouldn't blow it up out of proportion, you know. And just, "Oh, that was interesting. That's good. I'm glad that happened. It shows me I have some karmic propensity or some karmic connection with this, and I want to follow up on it." Instead of thinking, "I'm special." Yeah. Okay. There are a few stories. There are stories of a few exceptional disciples, and I have met a few individuals who have had profound experiences or have gained realizations through an encounter with their teacher. Their faith in their spiritual mentor was so strong that it was as if they had fallen unconscious. But when they revived from this unconscious state, it was apparent that they had had a deep experience of clear light. And so what is holiness the thing? Is what you just said before, is by the force of that devotion and, of course, their karma connection with the teacher, yeah, it makes the grosser levels of mind absorb and the clear light manifest, and then they use that clear light to realize emptiness, and spontaneously bodhicitta arises, great compassion arises, because they see that other sentient beings are drowning in dukkha because they don't realize emptiness. Someone may ask, is such a thing possible if the teacher is not highly realized, but the disciple has tremendous faith? Both the spiritual mentor and a disciple must be fully qualified for this to occur. If the teacher is not, how could that person spark in a disciple's mind a realization that is not present in his or her own mind? Most of the exceptional cases of gaining realizations primarily through faith are found in the Kagyu and Dzogchen lineages, where devotion is emphasized. A quotation from a Kagyu text says there is no doubt about the possibility of being liberated through devotion and veneration. This refers to those few individual cases in whom all the causes and conditions have come together for this to happen. Which means that this person has practiced in many, many previous lives. Applying this notion to the general Buddhist population would be a mistake. If everybody could be awakened only through intense devotion, there would be little difference between Buddhism and theistic religions. True or not true? Furthermore, the Buddha would not have given teachings that constitute more than 100 volumes in the Tibetan canon. Here we again see that the teachings and modes of practice relevant to specific individuals differ from those given in the general system of Buddhist teachings and practice. It is important not to confuse these. The teachings of the Nalanda tradition are given from the perspective of the general structure of the path and pertain to practitioners in general, whereas these exceptional cases apply primarily to mahasiddhis. Okay, so His Holiness mentions this a lot, that what is taught publicly in general can be different than what a teacher tells a specific student to do, because the general teachings have to be applicable for everybody. The instructions for a specific student apply to that particular person's constellations of causes and conditions, their personality, their dispositions, and so on. Okay? So we shouldn't take what advice given for one person and generalize it to everybody. Okay. But the general advice, everybody should practice. Okay, so we have a few minutes for questions.
I think I asked it yesterday, but maybe you can go a little bit more in detail. I'm still not really clear when it says seeing the Buddhas and or seeing the teacher as an emanation in the case of, what do you call that, teacher? Perfection vehicle teacher. Okay. So what's the difference seeing the teacher as a Buddha and then seeing him or her as an emanation?
Okay, what did I say yesterday?
I don't know, apparently. I mean...
You asked the question and I responded to it yesterday. What did I tell you yesterday?
It's an emanation, but for me, that's it's not really explaining it. What for the disciple is the difference?
What did I tell her yesterday when she asked the question? Anybody remember? Yeah, the Buddha is the Buddha. An emanation is something coming out of the Buddha.
Yes, that I understand. Okay. The word emanation, I understand. But what I don't understand is what's the difference, for example, for the disciple referring or seeing the teacher as a Buddha or as an emanation?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What do you think the difference would be?
I may be completely misunderstanding the question, but if you're only seeing the teacher as a Buddha, like during a tantric empowerment, then obviously that's different from seeing the Buddha as an emanation. I mean, seeing the teacher as an emanation of the Buddha, because there's teachers who aren't tantric teachers who could be seen as emanations of a Buddha, like the perfection.
Yeah, the question is. Yeah, it pertains to the difference between Tantra and perfection vehicle. But, you know, what... trying to think of a good analogy. What's the difference between seeing a real ghost sitting next to you when you come out of the haunted house at Disneyland? When you come out of the haunted house and you look in the mirror and there's a ghost sitting next to you? What's the difference between an actual ghost sitting next to you and a hologram of a ghost? They're different, aren't they? Yeah.
But these are all the teachings of the Buddha. Both teachers are teaching the Buddha's teaching, sharing the Buddha's teachings. And so, for some reason I can't really, I don't want to see a difference in that. Because when I have a teacher who's teaching me the bodhicitta path, bodhisattva path, and a teacher who's teaching me the tantric path, for me both paths can lead to awakening, right? And it sounds like seeing just the ghost in the mirror as if it wouldn't be the real teaching of the Buddha.
Well, like the question, I think His Holiness said somewhere before, that if you want to see all your teachers as the Buddha, go ahead, there's nobody stopping you. And if that helps your mind to do that, do that. If it helps your mind to see the cat as a Buddha, see the cat as a Buddha. Yeah, I mean, that's what you do in tantric practice. Okay? So nobody's telling you not to do that. Yeah, if you want to do that, that's fine. You know? And if it helps you to have regard and respect and appreciation, then great. Okay?
So when it talks about how when a fully very qualified teacher meets a very qualified disciple, and the disciple's mind, gross mind, suddenly falls away, and the subtle mind becomes active. What is happening in this situation?
Yeah, the gross mind is getting absorbed, and the subtle mind is manifesting.
What, like, what are they doing with each other? Is he laying hands on them or something?
No.
They're just sitting there in a room?
Probably.
Or meditating together?
Yeah, probably something like that. Or the teacher may be giving a teaching. And then the disciple goes into that kind of state. I don't know. I've never seen it. But that's how I imagine it happening. I don't think they're doing the waltz together. Please be aware, when you ask me questions about special exotic situations, I don't know how to answer them. You know? I have no idea how to answer them. So those are best asked, you know, highly realized teachers and see if they give you an answer. I can't. Okay? So I stick with, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. You know, I can manage that. But I can't you know, describe to you exactly, you know, what is going on, you know, when the gross minds are absorbing, and, you know, whether the teacher's laying hands on them or doing a dance or blowing a shofar or, you know, I have no idea, okay? Yeah.
Personal experience is that when I came to live here with my teacher, I had some very, very romantic notions about what that relationship would be like. And it took me a long time to realize that the fault finding was dangerous. I did not have the respect that was really deserved of my teacher. And that I can honestly say that if I hadn't moved here and I hadn't had a relationship with my teacher, even if I had stayed as a Buddhist practitioner, I would be nowhere. And a part of it is that I get to see the Dharma, as His Holiness says, modeled in everyday life in all the ordinary kinds of situations that people deal with all the time, including my teacher. And so the modeling is the part that I got to appreciate, but it took me a long time because I had a lot of romantic, magical thinking about what that relationship would look like, and it did not serve me at all until I matured into, from my own side, to be able to see the benefit that happens from, you know, from my teacher. So this whole idea about high thrones, that's easy, but when you really have the opportunity to live with your teacher, that's another whole ball game altogether.
Yeah, and you have to put your feet on the ground, you know. So now she writes me emails. I just got one, you know. Tomorrow I want to take some people out to Lop.
Where are you?
Yeah. Yeah. Where should I take them to Lop? Where have you been signed up? Yeah. Go to this certain place in the forest. Yeah.
And that's my training.
Yeah.
Because one of the things is that, how do I say this? I've discovered that there's the who I am, that I get trained in a very SMK way, and that my teacher knows exactly what that looks like, and that's what I really have come to appreciate.
Yeah, so tell the guy who was supposed to organize the cutting of the dead trees, you know. Yeah. I mean, that's how we learned. Okay, let's dedicate.